Blog Talk Radio.
Never violate the codes of the streets, and I would never make a promise that I know I couldn't keep, and I would never testify, cop out for a plea, or surrender information on my boys to the police, and you could never catch me on the block without a strap, and I would never pull it out unless I'm about to black, and I could never forget my homies dying for their scratch, but ever pouring out liquor for them, God to the back, and I
would. Very happy to join you. See your friends in the building, man. Appreciate you coming out to fuck with us. In the building. I see y'all out there, man. I just want y'all to know one motherfucking thing. I would never, ever violate the codes of the streets, and I would never make a promise that I know I couldn't.
Heads up, eyes open, the fist clip. Say that we get some of this here shit. This should be the chairman checking in. Now, when I say cold to the seas, we talking about the past the clubs. Like at the party clubs, that is. I would never violate the cold of the seas. Would never speak nor serve the interests of our enemies. And if I say that I'm with you, we'll come get you. You best believe that like bad luggage, we'll never leave. Now, of course, I can never say that I'm never gonna go broke. Because sad to say that we ain't never had this shit roll. Well, I can never say how it's gonna go. One thing for sure, two things for certain. They're gonna shut up motherfuckers like us. They gonna have to kill us. Close up in the casket. Read a quick verse and close the motherfucking curtains.
Never be sad, I would, I like a hoe. Never been punk, I'll never let it slide. Never let it go. Never ever, never ever ever. No, get on my level hoe. Or go get a shovel hoe. It's never in question for my manhood, I get down. I never switch, never stick, never sit down. I never hesitate to squeeze a nigga six rounds. I never squat to take a bitch, who's the bitch now?
I would never put profit over politics, principle, nor our people. I would never sell my soul. Never put bullshit in the business and never place good upon the evil. You see, why I'm determined to die before being dishonored. Committed to being captured and killed before being capitulated. And now we'll be perfected and pushing this shit to the motherfucking living. And if need be, pull the motherfucking trigger with a pistol without no hesitation. I will pass the cover to my last breath, to my last goddamn roar. And we'll never forget what them pigs did at 4:35 a.m. in 1969 in Chicago on December the 4th. Never.
Never ran, never will, I ain't never scared. It's in my bloodline, the realest nigga ever bred. And that's some of the realest shit that I done ever said. And I can die, but through my lyrics, I ain't never dead. I never disrespect my mama, never disrespect her mama neither. I never turn my back on Jesus. I never get caught off in the system, I believe her. Man that follows man, ain't a man, and I'm a leader.
I will never cross my comrades and never forsake our fight for freedom. And if you listen to my second verse, let me say it again just in case y'all want to listen. I will never put profit over politics, principle, nor our people. I will never disrespect the legacy of Minister UEP. Never betray the Black Panther Party. And never bow down and lay down a legacy at the feet of our enemies. Never. I am a Panther cub by birth and by battle. This is my bloodline and my prison time. And when it be, now wherever the enemy, if they try to hijack this legacy, wherever it be, not on our watch. But we'll never have it. Never.
Never gonna turn cold, my nigga. I can never trade. I never cross my homies out. That ain't how I'm made. And I never had not one regret on how I was raised. I'm from the ghetto where I slung and rapped it every day. Never knew no other way. This ain't gonna never change. Never gonna bite my tongue. Fuck what a nigga say. 100 with myself. I swore to God I'd stay the same. And when I finally got my paper, I was on my game. Never talk a nigga down. Do your thing, dawg. Never hate a dude for trying. That's insane, dawg. Get your motherfucking money. That's the thing, dawg. Too many homies die young. Feel my pain, y'all.
October 23rd, 24th, 2016. All roads lead to Oakland, California. Lonely legacy of Black Panther Party. Protected, respected, and never, never neglected. Never.
It's gonna be some stuff you're gonna see that's gonna make it hard to smile in the future.
gotta keep your sense of humor. You gotta be able to smile through all this bullshit.
Oh,
You get this line? Okay, that's what it is. Let's get locked and loaded for another episode, y'all. I just there you go. Try to get live on Instagram. Get live on this here. Okay. Bear with us, y'all. Let me say cub with us. That's what it is. Okay, let's get locked and loaded. Okay. Bear with it, bear with one second. Let me get something to put this, to prop this up with. I'm trying to check this StreamYard thing connected, y'all. Okay, make sure you go live on StreamYard. Up and with all this technology here. One second. Someday. Okay, there you go. I don't know if the StreamYard is working. Let's see if we're going in. I'm on mic. Okay, one second. Testing. Okay, I think I'm rolling with this studio, the StreamYard. I think I'm on this live. Heads up, ass over the fist, clinch, y'all. Welcome to another episode of Free Mall Radio, hosted by yours truly, Chairman Fred Hampton Jr., Robin Allen, a.k.a. Lady Ray. Let's make history. Let's take history, y'all. That's what it is. Right on. Let me talk. Okay. Stop cam. I'm hoping I'm going on stream, y'all. I'm trying this technology. Let me turn this little air off real quick in the background. I'm almost about to get hot in here. Okay. Those who have been following us, y'all know we've been there. You know, so we on Instagram. We on Blog Talk Radio. We are coming to you live and direct. Hopefully, we on this stream, y'all. We're going to see what it do, y'all. Y'all can't take a pause for the call. I'm not in the studio today. We at the Hampton House. Call in 929-477-3785. Then press 1 to be heard. Just getting back in. Living out of suitcase, man. You know, I'm a little rested up. Got the opportunity to lay down in the bed for a minute, jump in some water in a body of water. Let me stress that, because you know what I'm saying? Because, you know, you don't get no shower or nothing. I do that, but just that body of water was something, though. Woo! Try to use the StreamYard camera. Try to use this here. Okay. Hope it's recording. Okay, we live and direct, y'all. Y'all feel free. We gonna follow up on the episode that we missed last week. Unfortunately, but fortunately. We out in the land. Man, I'm doing a lot of conversations around. They trying to close the Hampton House. I'm telling you, name it. Oof, man. Man, can't make this up. I'll be remiss, you know what I'm saying, we don't acknowledge it. I know it's to the point that people think it's normal, the continuous murder, the continuous genocide that's happening in the streets of Chicago, a.k.a. Chirac, and every other colonized community. The deal is we can't have these conversations in a subjective type of way. I keep, you know, dismissing certain dynamics, in particular mental illness, the counterinsurgency in particular. What's this? Okay, this is coming in. You know, my own. One second, y'all. Let me just in my own. My first time. Okay, so what can I do? Okay,
that is. Okay, let's try this. Y'all can hear the background music is really bad. Man, you can't make this up. One day I'm going to just lay out all the struggles we're going through as we speak. Okay, I'm on YouTube now. I'm at the Hampton House recording. Y'all can hear what I'm going through here, man. Can't make this up, man. Cannot make this up.
You said one day you're going to lay out all those struggles. That'll probably be enough to wrap the globe.
Man, too weighted in such a way. Say something. How do I? Okay, I'm on YouTube. How do I? Okay, I'm. Look at this. Man, this is crazy. Let's try this. Okay, go live. Let's go there. Let's try that. That's really the thing right now. Come on, man. It's one thing. It's enough. Oh, my God. Okay, so I'm gonna scratch the string. There's too much stuff. I'm trying to do like an octopus trying to balance all this stuff at one time. Give me some music, so the comrade. The comrade, play me some music.
Mr. Daphne, you might have it on mute.
I'm trying to get this YouTube. I'm on live. I can't it's saying, what's your phone number? Get some 20, another, the 201 number here. I'm trying to go, yeah, man, it's all type of stuff. But yeah. Yeah, they ain't got this propaganda in the back, huh? Yeah. Okay, yeah. Well, okay. Yeah, man. Gang next. Now the battery for the down computer, man. Ooh. Yeah, let me figure it out. Let me just go on the regular show. All right, let me figure it out. All right, come on. Thank you. BMR, so come right, you down?
BMR, bless you. Aim, but damn it.
Heads up, eyes open, the fist clenched.
Yeah.
You still be the chairman, Fred Hampton Jr.
Live and direct.
See, now I need y'all to bear with me as I bear my soul and take you on the insides behind enemy lines about some state-sanctioned assassinations, mass incarcerations, and some other plans that these pigs have put into place in order, amongst other things, to control the world population. You see, now it ain't no coincidence. A lot of y'all cats don't even know about the infamous COINTELPRO shit. G-men, government hitmen, directed by Director J. Edgar Hoover and hitmen. Political frame-ups, which they still got out of cats politically caged up, killing us and hitting us with more than just a gun. And some names with some legal reasons I can't even mention, still on the run. Now imagine, if you will, same goddamn government brought in all the dope, putting your picture on the poster, placing a bounty on your black ass with the words warning blazing across the daily news front page. Your face being placed right up under an institutional issue scope. See, we talking about a bunch of bad motherfuckers. We're looking for number one ducking on motherfucking trouble. See, go-getters and hard-hitters who gave us free medical centers. You see, stood straight up against the system and said, yeah, motherfucker, we subversive and freedom of death. And strapped up in the spirit of self-defense. Free clothes and free busing programs. First free breakfast programs. Armed with a political ideology that withstood the test of time and a 10-point platform. Now fast forward, in closing words, on the tongues of Black Panther Party clubs, let us continue resisting. Never forget, 2037 West Monroe, 4:35 a.m. in the morning, west side of Chicago, 1969, similar form. Importance of politicizing the gun. We be the ideological sons and daughters of the black cats. And we the ones who brought the days of the dark shades and alphas back. And we ain't got no problem with you praising the Lord if you willing to bring the spirit of Nat back. Who we be? We be the ones with rest records longer than average cats rap records. By no means, this ain't no intentional shit. In fact, it's one of the signs of us being under attack. Therefore, these statistics are plainly mainly due to the state's attack. We the ones that don't get due credit until the state say it's safe to say it. In other words, a lot of y'all are showing some love after we long gone in the grave. But for now, many see it correct politically to only have the ability to speak in secrecy about the moves we made. Who we be? We recognize the central potential of armed propaganda. And we done raised the bar of what it is to be a diehard. In this game, we done the thing of what it is from a cat considering himself a criminal to a convict of prisons of conscience. Who we be? You see, we the enlisted men and women in the people's army. And our kinfolk fall from the trees, the leaves, the lights of those of Chairman Fred and Fran Fanon. We sprout from the seeds of UEP, not long, but the one that sent the sentiments to the...
Here's the eyes over the fist pinch, y'all. As you may have seen, we have some technical and better yet political difficulties on getting on Instagram, and the background noise around the Hampton House is intense. You know, as I'm going on record, I'm on Facebook now, but I can't get on Instagram. But it's a tactic, you know what I'm saying? Like even in the prisons, the type of music they play around you, psychological warfare, You know, even you know, your case in white communities with the case of Waco, Texas, before they came in, you know, to the type of they bombarded with the type of music they had to, around them. You know, so right now, even around the Hampton House, we going this. I mean, it's intense. You know, what I'm saying this the warfare. You know, saying, I mean, we've been challenged by everything from chemical biological warfare, AKA. The state having, you know, Asian provocateurs push, you know, narcotics, plantation poison, you know, on and about around the Hampton House, which we dealt with, exposed that contradiction. Now the psychological warfare, the propaganda bomb, the music thing, this running bombarding around the house as we speak. So, you know, we now problems with the Wi-Fi, kind of the stream yard, that's not working through. But we're going to the corner, get a shot of water, come back out swinging. So we're going to put an old broadcast up right now and let that play. We will be coming back in, tuning back in with y'all. We wanted to talk about this week on this week's show. We do want to talk about, matter of fact, you know what, I'm going to try to ride this out. Just, I ain't going to lie to you. You know, be straight up with you. Battle fatigue is a motherfucker, man. Straight up. Battle fatigue is a motherfucker, you know. You know, just, if you just can hear what's going on right here, you know, saying, you know, on and about around Hampton House as we speak, you know, just constantly, you know. And I just got to, you know, take a breather, just lay in a bed, some water, some of the lake, river, whatever that was, the other day. And, you know, just everything, you know, we battled, you know, we're getting the museum rolling. They was an Asian provocateurs at us, you know what I'm saying? People, you know what I'm saying, you know, man, this is happening, natural shit, you know, the floods and the ceiling falling in. We're going to keep on battling, man, you know what I'm saying? We won't over-talk this stuff, this propaganda be going at us right now. But I'm going to try to go on Instagram. I'm on Facebook Live now. I'll try to stream y'all another time. Try to go down on YouTube. But meantime, friends, y'all feel free to call in with us. And I don't want to be on here like I'm sounding, you know, like I'm singing the blues. There ain't no music. Well, there is music playing, but it definitely ain't the blues. But feel free to call in. The club being 929-477-3785 and press 1 to be heard. So, my comrade, yeah, let's retract that last edict I had called for for the backup show. And we're going to try to ride this out for a minute. You know, trying to just over-talk, just, you know, speak over. And I remember, like, when I was locked up, this type of tactic they would do, you know what I'm saying? They would, you know, blab, you know, opposing music, you know what I'm saying? I'm using that term loosely to contend with the politics, you know what I'm saying? There's not no question what's happening right now here at Hampton House. So, y'all call, we feel free to, want everybody to call in, let us know, you know, we don't want to sell you the moment about the phenomenal mobilization we had down to the grave site of Chairman Fred Hampton. It was phenomenal, you know?
Yeah.
Hainesville, Louisiana, so y'all feel free, you know, how it impacted you, your thoughts about it, you know, why we put the bulletproof casing cover over the casing. I don't want to say cover because still you can see through it. So we want people to be able to see through it. I think that was some of the initial struggles we had in regards to getting the casing over it. Some people's position was, yes, indeed. He's really, it's clear. I mean, they got a little surrounding, the state's a little surrounding this motherfucking house. I'm talking about, you know, surrounding it, you know. They come with everything from bullets to sugar, the 7 miles they talk to sugar coated bullets. Some years back, some forces, some comrades position that we placed a tombstone. We wanted the Emmett Till case, the world to see what's going on. You know, so we came to the conclusion, we got the case he put over it. But y'all feel free, you know, call in with your thoughts, 929-477-3785, press 1. Feel free, you know, and comment. I'm trying to get this YouTube jumping up too. What happened, nephew? I see you in the building, man, long time, man. We over here still battling, man. We at the Hampton House, man. They trying to drown us out, this motherfucker, man. Now all of a sudden they got all type of, you know what I'm saying, contented music playing and You know what I'm saying? They had us in this motherfucker, man. They try to surround us, you know what I'm saying? They send motherfuckers agents inside, because inside, outside, top, bottom, you name it. They ain't playing like this. Ain't why none. Real talk. It's good to see you out there, though, man. Real talk. So y'all feel
well, Chairman,
free them all, comrade.
But let me get mine in real quick. I just wanted to speak on the pilgrimage down to Hainesville to the grave site of Chairman Fred Hampton Sr. and how it affected me. I took my two children down there with me. The ride was long, but when we got there, you know, I thought I was like on the wrong road. It was deep down in the woods and back roads and dirt roads and everything. And then we got there and seeing the tombstone or the covering, the monument of it to cover over Chairman's tombstone, the one that's shot up and disrespected. To see the whole process and to see the people that made the pilgrimage down there to share in that event was a beautiful thing. And you mentioned one time, like, to get down there, it's not an easy feat. You know, it ain't something you just decide while you sipping some lemonade, let's go over here to this gravesite. And, you know, it had to, you got to go, and it's an effort to get down there. So, you know, the people that go down there and disrespect that gravesite, you know, that's their plan. Like, we're going to go down here and make it our mission. It's a definite mission to do so. But to be there and experience and see his gravesite and Miss Iberia and Big Daddy. Was it Big Daddy and Big Mama or Big Daddy?
Big Daddy and Big Mom, my paternal grandparents, who were buried right behind Chairman Fred, Big Daddy and Big Mama, Francis Hampton, and Iberia Hampton, and also my grandfather and my great grandfather and great grandmother Ellie U. White. Is it Mary White? His wife was my great grandparents. Ellie U. White was. In fact, the whole some of the cemeteries in the South, it's in one way or another. I guess a lot of places in the South in general, the family relationships are, you know, one way or another. Like, this cousin, such and such, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think about four or five families that were there. Yeah. And also the church was an embryo. I think it was named the church that was burnt down. That's no longer there also, but it was. We had a packed house in the cemetery,
Man, I was very honored to be there and experience that. Like I said, it was a beautiful thing, and to just be there, and I got to have words. I got to say a little something to the chairman. I never, you know, been to this. This was my first trek down there. I know the Cubs make a pilgrimage every year, but this was my first one, so I got to say some words to him, and, you know, it was just a beautiful thing for me, a beautiful experience, and I hope I can make future treks down there when we go down there to pay our respects and honor him on Father's Day.
Right on. So, yeah, y'all put it, every Father's Day is the people's pilgrimage, so I'll book y'all. You make y'all that Louisiana. It was phenomenal, you know. Those in Mississippi, get ready for the next big move. That's the August 30th at the Chamber of Prayer, having a street party.
Yes, sir.
So I'm still trying to get this YouTube rolling while we talking, y'all. So y'all bear with me, or Cub with me. We had a call.
I know Sister Daphne had a call in the queue.
Yeah. Okay. Coming, you're calling you.
Oh, yes, sir. Free them all. We have Brother Ninja. on the line for your mom.
Hey, how you doing, Fairmont? How you doing? How you doing?
I'm well. Welcome to Fairmont Radio, Brother Ninja. Welcome to Fairmont Radio.
Well, you know, number one, I'm from over there, from on Adams Street, over there behind your father's old house. Back in the 90s, though, I was staying over there back when y'all was doing some protests. You know the old house. Did they tear that down, though, the house where the shooting happened at in December of 1969?
Yes, the actual house is torn down. It's another house, another building placed there now. In fact, we had the opportunity to a few years back to rest there December 4th overnight. So that the actual house is still there. Excuse me. The actual house is not still there, but it's another building there. And we go there to that site every. Well, I go there a lot, but you know, also in particular, August 30th and December the 4th are two major dates where we go there. You know, my comrade of court, Jerry, she gives a blow-by-blow, I mean literally blow-by-blow detail of what occurred on that morning, December 4th, 1969.
Yes, because I stayed on the next block, though, back in the early 90s. I stayed on the next block, back when the house was still there, the original.
Yeah, they had came and tore down, let's say, they, the state, they had tore down the actual building. The actual headquarters that was on Madison, California, and I don't know if you can call it a wall that was on Madison and Levitt. It was a wall on Madison and Levitt that had a painting of Chairman Fred, Malcolm X, and the Panther logo. All those were torn down within like a week's time period. You know, in fact.
Well, okay. What about the picture? What about the picture? Of your father, Madison, California, Daddy Davis's office. Is that still there? Did they tear that down?
No. The initial ones we had placed that the mural. That was in 2010. The first mural was an artist from Chile. We had talked to this real social forum in Detroit, and the Reverend Diaz. So they came. That was 2010. We had it redone this past in 2020 on the 10th anniversary because it was chipping away. Everybody was talking about we're gonna raise funds to put a protector on. You know, just a lot of people just making rich in promises, poor in blessings because it was real bad. And we only did it, you know. So we just replaced it this past 2020. This mural has from New York. He painted, yeah, Chairman Fred, you had the picture of Mark Clark, you have Deborah Johnson, myself as a child, Minister of Health, while I'm Dr. Thatcher.
Okay. Yeah, because I had back in 99, I was trying to get my boss. My boss, his name was David Culp. He was, he did Stir of Echoes. I played a security guard in the movie. And I gave him a biography of Chairman Fred, Herbert Sr., and I was trying to get him to do the movie, but he was so busy, tied up, I guess, doing Spider-Man, and he wanted to do Spider-Man instead of the Black Panther movie, though. But, he still liked it, though, you know. But I tried, though. That was back in, 99?
Well,
yeah. Let me tell you what I'm doing tomorrow. Tomorrow, on July the 1st at my 2700 California, Victor Woods, a former ex-con who was sentenced to federal penitentiary for the masterminding of $40 million credit card conspiracy turned national speaker. And he's the author of A Breed Apart and, his book, about him being, doing how to do credit card scams. And also he's doing a thing at the press conference at Cook County Jail tomorrow in the unit that houses the most violent criminals in jail. Will be assisted by a team that will put together individuals in attendance to sign a pledge not to commit any acts of violence that put the lives of innocent babies, women, children, and innocent adults at risk or being killed by any gunfire or, and the press going to be in there, Channel 2, and I'm going to be in there too with Channel 2 and Indigo Magazine. So we all going to be covering this tomorrow at 26th California. So what do you think about something like that, though? They're standing the pledge, though. You think it's going to work or it's not, it's not going to work? Though. I'm promising they're going to kill or murder nobody when they get out of jail.
So what just my clarity, is this something, okay, these are the brothers bringing the players to them, and this, and does this, are they getting out already, or this part of the campaign to call for their release?
Well, no, this is not a campaign for the release, though. It's for whoever's getting out, you know, within, you know, soon, I guess, they're going to sign the pledge. Whoever's going to get out, so whatever, any murderer, killer, I guess, and did their time and about to get out soon, they're going to sign this pledge saying that they're not going to kill or murder nobody when they get out of jail. So, you know, just people that's up, you know, they got their, you know, coming up to get out free at jail and stuff, though. So, you know, but he's not giving no knockoff, no probation, and no time knockoff or nothing like that. It's just that, you know, once you get out, you know, you got to keep your word, and you sign up that pledge, say you're not going to kill or harm nobody, though. So they're going to be signing it tomorrow. People that's getting out,
you know,
soon or later on. Down the line.
I don't want to appear as a pessimist, but I just want to, especially, I know it's emotional, what we're dealing with, in particular right now, I mean, every day, I think what the latest numbers, the last 48 hours, I mean, people have been shot and murdered, and just in Chicago, shot right along, and this is not something that just happened in Chicago, or, you know, to Oakland, California, Cleveland, all over. And I just like to, you know, struggle with the narrative, make sure the narrative is clear that it's not just something that on our, that we got, and it's embarrassing to say this, it hurts to say this, it's not something on our call, you know what I'm saying? In fact, I would go so far as to say that many people just dismiss it. The black people doing the killings here. There's an ethnic cleansing. There's an ethnic cleansing occurring in Chicago. There's a genocide happening throughout the country. There's a genocide. There's an ethnic cleansing occurring. And, you know, I cannot, and it's so blatant. It's impacting everything. You know, black people came in an apartment. They can't get no home. You know, who's giving the weapons to them, you know what I'm saying? And Marcus Garvey had a saying, well, poverty comes in the front door, morality leaves at the back window. And the shooting, I mean, case after case, people saying they don't know who's doing the shooting. You know what I'm saying? So I commend the brother, I commend our community to take the stand, and we commit not to engage in activities that are detrimental to our community, you know what I'm saying, murder, rape, so on and so forth. But I just want to begin that. Non-independent people do not make independent decisions. You know, I mean, like, it's kind of like they're on the plantation. Some of you say they're going to commit not to eat chitlins. You know what I'm saying? What's going down here? A lot of these murders are not even, you know what I'm saying, even being, you know, enacted by us. You know, I just want to put that into. But again, I'm not trying to start with a moment. So I commend you. We can be support. Let the word out. We definitely would like to do that. You know. With the word, I just want to be very clear that when we talk about this emotional issue of crime and murders, that it's bigger than us, what's happening in our communities. It's extremely political, and it's, you know, and it's genocide.
Yeah, genocide big time.
Yes, sir. Big time.
That's terrible. And then, you know, we did a press conference for the missing postal worker too the other day ago, Chairman Fred. You know, Kara Cole is a postal worker that's been missing for 3 years. That was 3 months pregnant.
Yes.
Yeah, so so what's going on with that case? The police have video evidence of Kara Cole going to the ATM, giving her baby daddy $400. That's what the mother said. But the mother also said, though, you know, they got this evidence, they're not going to use it against them. They're going to hold on to this evidence, and they're not even going to show it to her. They're going to talk about it. And just, you know, repeatedly talk to her about it, but they're going to show it to her or use it against him, though, that he was the last one that was with her and got that $400 with her, you know, when she disappeared at the ATM. Mm-hmm.
That, you know, and I definitely want to reiterate the case of, let me call you back, bro. I'm on the radio. Are we doing a radio show right now? Yes, sir.
All right.
Hold on. Bring them on. We want to, the case for Kara Cole and the countless of other, you know, missing people, missing children in particular, you know what I'm saying, black women, black men, black children, colonized communities, you know what I'm saying. This is a conversation that, you know, I mean, that the issue of the theft of body organs, all this, you know, and so many, you know what I'm saying, the crimes, all this is inclusive in this conversation. But we definitely want, you know what I'm saying, we definitely open, but like you just, I mean, it's look at these cases, and it's more to it. It's just, you know, we coming up missing, more to it than simply, you know, simply that of murder, you know. I'll say the other day, you can take some of these numbers and just switch the narrative around, replace the narrative around with black people, with, you know, so with dogs or cats. You said there was, you know, 18 dogs shot in the last 48 hours, or this dead, that'd be a world uproar. So we definitely, you know, we'll keep pushing for the campaign for Kara Cole. We just want to show with our people, or show the people in general, to look at this with a bigger picture, too, what's going on here.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I just found out today it was the 20th anniversary. This other lady I know called Sheila Bradley, she be out here in the streets with me doing press conference for Missing Women and Kids. And today is the 20th anniversary of her nieces. Diamond and Tiana Bradley have been missing for 20 years now. This is the anniversary today. And their mama had went to work early in the morning at 7 o'clock and came back at 12 o'clock and found a note in the house saying that they're going to the store.
And King John, I mean, on 35th, around the low end. Damn.
Yeah.
Around the low end. I recall the case. Yeah, I recall the case. I'm very familiar with both cases. You know what I'm saying? Kara Cole's, her family, mother, and father, I know them both very well. We've been on the ground working with their campaign. And it's 20, Diamond Tiana Bradley, that's 20 years. Wow.
Sheila Bradley, she comes to a lot of the Kara Cole's press conferences with me. And we do press conferences for her family, too, though. And it's the 20th anniversary.
In fact, I had got locked up that year, because in the 20 years, but we've been on support with that, so I tell you, keep us abreast, keep us feel free, get them, they can feel free to call in, too. In fact, we've had the Cole family on here a few times, but definitely, we on deck in regards to the case. Yeah, but I ain't been that long, 20 years. They were missing, and
not a clue, they got no clues. Not a clue.
Man. Yep. There's a comedian named Patrice O'Neal. Patrice O'Neal. Real intelligent cat. I believe they assassinated him. He might be out of Boston. Heavyset brother.
Mm-hmm.
He did a whole comedy about how blacks, you know, when black, you say, he gonna start carrying a white keychain with him. When a white person on it, so they get lost, they'll find them. He said, entire black football team came missing. They just went to the borders of the war and looked up. They gone. That's it. He said, but any other community, you see, like, on TV, you know, it's viewed constantly. Yeah, Patrice O'Neal did a whole comedy sketch about that.
Yeah. It's just a shame what's going on. It's just ridiculous.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. We incorporate the campaign of Find Them All. We say free them all, we say Find Them All.
I just hope that we ain't gonna be doing no Kara Cole's 20th anniversary in 20 years from now. I hope we find a way before 20 years go by.
I agree with you, brother. Yes, indeed.
Especially when they're not using the evidence. Especially when the police is doing on that George Floyd type stuff, and they're not doing want to use the evidence because they have some racist stuff.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly, brother.
And then you got Kim Fox. She want to let, you know, murderers and killers and, you know, because I was also affiliated with the little boy, Darren Abbott, he got beat to death by them kids with 2x4s.
Say that again.
Darren Abbott, back 10 years ago, Darren Abbott, a 15-year-old boy, had got beaten to death by four kids with 2x4s by Finger High School.
At Finger High School.
Yeah, that was my coworker's grandson that she was taking care of at her house, and my coworker.
Did you know something in the background with that case?
All I know is it was like something like a gang war or something going on, And he was just out to be in there. He was an A student, and he was the wrong time, the wrong place. Coming out, they was breaking out of school. And when they broke out of school, they just started taking 2x4s and started whipping in, I guess, the rival gang. It was on YouTube for a couple of years. The murder of Grant Hall was on YouTube. That's how they used the video to solve the case. The police looked at everybody in the video that was being Dan Albert to death with the 2x4s, and they put them in jail. But I'm going to tell you something, man, that don't nobody know about. Kim Fox, now, she lied to the family and said she was going to give him 30 years, right? But in reality, though, the lawyer for the person that killed Darren Abbott, one of them with the 2x4s, that lady was doing a political favor for Kim Fox to help her get an office. So Kim Fox returned the favor by giving him probation. So now he's out of jail, and he's free committing other crimes. Kim Fox is dirty. She might be black, but she's white racist on the inside. I'm just telling her
Actually, you get back on that case. This case, in fact, is reflective of what I'm talking about in all these cases. Some of the entrails or the chitlins that go along with this. In fact, one guy was released because we had protested that he was about his innocence. He was attacked by the media, the Obama administration. Chicago per capita has the most military academies in the country, Chicago, and the black children are being funneled to either the drugs or the cartel or the military, in Chicago in particular. The school, now, Darren Albert was beaten right by Finger High School.
Yes, correct. That's correct.
Children. Excuse me?
No, he said that's correct.
Okay, I'm thinking high school. Now, Argyle Gardens is with a school where black people have fought to get a school out in Argyle Gardens, South Suburbs. As a result of a program entitled Renaissance 2010. We were challenging it way back in 2004, 2005, 2006. Some of the major proponents of Renaissance 2010 was later to be National Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan. Inclusive in Renaissance 2010 were the shutting down of schools and packing children on top of each other without any transitional period, and really heightened the race and class contradiction. For example, on the west side of Chicago, Crane High School, they had placed in a city that was known top, Chicago was and maybe one of the top segregated cities in the country, segregated. They had placed the first generation of Spanish-speaking children on top of the black children, you know what I'm saying? And they created a situation. And Crane, it was embroiled, it was in trouble. This is the race contradiction. Now, Argyle Gardens, they had shut that school down and turned it to a military academy. So now you have people coming out of their home in Argyle Gardens, and their children, they're seeing the children getting resources only if they join the military, if they go to, not just the ROTC, but become the military academy. And then the students that were formed, that formerly went to that school in Argyle Gardens being bused to Finger High School. That area around Finger was known as the Ville. So now you have a class contradiction because that area in Finger is more of the petty bourgeoisie. You follow me? You understand what I'm saying? So you had a class contradiction. It was done. It was strategic. They packed them on top of each other. It was known about what was going to occur that day. The doors were locked on those students, Darren Albert included. There's footage of police sitting right there watching this occur. Chicago police.
Was watching Darren Albert get murdered, huh?
This is reflective. This is one of the cases of what I'm talking about or what's going on here. It's simplistic and it's romantic, you know what I'm saying, and it's reactionary. And I'm not talking about you in particular, to give a response that people just killing each other. It's kind of like in Rwanda. People think Hutus and Tutsis just started killing each other. They didn't talk about the role that the Belgium, the French, had played. They didn't know the radio broadcast that came out prior from the Chinese community. Who brought the knives in? They talk about the plane with the leadership from, I believe, the Hutu community being mysteriously shot down. In Chicago, are you familiar with the infamous Woodlawn experiment? Are you familiar with the Woodlawn experiment?
No, no. What's that?
This is where, okay, now Mayor Daley Senior was before he was the mayor, he was of Cook County, clerk of Cook County. And they had black people, like kind of similar, like Tulsa, Oklahoma, that wasn't the only place. This was common where black people, you know what I'm saying, they had thriving communities. They were forced out one way or another. Do you know that even in Tulsa, there were three more attempts after 1919 where they consistently came back and, you know what I'm saying, rebuild. And they continued to shut down, murdered, and ran out. In Hyde Park, it was a thriving community. Black people were there. You see it now, but it's kind of questionable if it's black people or not. But this is a high part. So they said that you have to have, it came with a law that you have to have insurance on your home, simultaneously not selling insurance to the black community. So you got them about it. This is the 1950s, late 1950s. So then fast forward to the 1960s, the Woodlawn area, where black people, there was a thriving black community. You had entities such as the University of Chicago, Sears and Roebuck, First National Bank, Rockefeller Foundation, Ford Foundation, funneled through fiscal agents, through pass-throughs, $100 million cash money minimum. At the same time, the Chicago Police Department dressed up as the Devil Disciples, they drive-bys from Stone's headquarters, created a crime epidemic in which the property value decreased. Mm. Lo and behold, you have the University of Chicago having all their property. This is some of the history of Chicago. This is some of the history of America. You look at the Boston, are you familiar with the details of the Boston Tea Party?
Oh yeah, yes, the Boston Tea Party.
I'm not so loud. Are you talking about the revised edition or the real edition? The revised edition does not talk about how the initial colonies, the 13 colonies, how they dressed up like the indigenous, the native people. They called Indians because they were fighting for challenging. With the crown of England was taxing them without representation. They think it was, we want to fight against taxation without representation. They didn't go out and say they dressed like, so they made it like the native people had this big tea party on the boats. And they used it as a political football. So when there's an agenda to be put forward, many communities are used as a political football for someone else to get to the goal. And this is the Boston Tea Party where they threw all the lick up the tea up into the lakes, the river, the ocean, but they dress like native people. So these are some of the underground, the behind the scenes, kind of like I'm talking about, or what's happening in our communities. I got a couple more calls calling in. Please check in with. I got people calling from stay online. This is the show. We have people calling from prison. Some more calls calling in right now. So please stay with us. We get a couple of callers calling in. Yeah.
Grandma.
Grandma, we are.
Grandma, Brother Champion, we have a sister from the camp on that. Grandma.
Welcome, Free Mall.
What's going on?
We're still fighting the game. Matter of fact, it's another. We hear you loud and clear. Right on. Good to hear your voice.
Okay.
If you could, one second. Hey, it's another caller, 708. If he can be brought in too, I think we're going to be talking some of the same issues about this, the recall for parole. I think it's a 708 number two that's in holding. So he can be brought in. I think it's the same bill we're talking about. So, Sister Conrad, can you see a 708? You see a 708 number in call?
It's a couple of them. If they can press one to come into queue, Chair, I can identify them.
Press one to come in the queue, 708. So press the one that we're going to be talking about, the recall for parole. I think it's the same thing.
Okay, I have them
talking
about. I'll bring them in now, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, right on.
Okay.
Okay.
Hello?
Hello? Yeah. Who am I speaking with? Welcome to Fremont Radio. Who am I?
How you doing, man? This is Kevin. This is the brother that was talking to you about us and the issues with parole Illinois, trying to bring parole back into the state of Illinois.
Okay. Okay. Well, welcome to Fremont Radio. We also have someone now. She's been calling in for quite some time on Fremont Radio. She's been talking about this issue also. So I'm gonna open up both of y'all. You know what I'm saying? If you can, because she's calling directly from the inside. So she's gonna open up and then you jump right in and give us information what's going on here. How can we be of assistance? So go right ahead. I'm gonna open up. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm right. The floor is yours.
I'm calling about House Bill 2399 and Senate Bill 2333. The good news is that we got 50 out of 60 of the House vote, and we got 20 out of 30 for the Senate vote. We need to get the majority vote in order to get that. We need to get, her name is Greenwood. She's the majority leader. They want to take a lot of the carve-outs. They want to get the legislators demand a carve-out for certain sex offenses in exchange for their vote. So if we don't get those carve-outs, we won't get those votes.
What are carve-outs? What are carve-outs?
Carve-outs is where they take out certain offenders that are no longer, they won't be eligible for it. So if a carve-out would affect a few dozen people, it would enable us to get parole review for thousands of people with life sentences, with truth in sentencing. And this bill would basically earn reentry parole, would dismantle truth in sentencing for everyone who the bill makes eligible.
Okay, I got another call online. I don't think y'all know each other, but I told them to call. I want to see the time. You know, different perspectives or even united perspective, what have you, about getting this information out. So feel free, Kevin, to jump in too. You know what I'm saying? And I definitely want to make sure y'all have each other contact also. But go ahead. Is it the same bill you talking about, Kevin?
No doubt. I definitely would like to reach out to continue to build out. My name is Kevin Bloomingberg. Many people know me by SWAC. And so I'm in alignment with everything that she's saying. This is what's so crazy about it, is that we profess to say that we believe in giving people a second chance, yet we don't have any mechanisms in place to help to facilitate that. And so we've been doing the same thing for like hundreds of years when it comes to like dealing with crime, dealing with prisoners, and all of these things we tried that failed. So if you continue to do the same thing over and over again expecting different results, that's the definition of insanity. Wisdom dictates that if you keep doing the same thing and it's not working for you, then you try something different. So I'm looking at it like this. 20 years is long enough for an individual to figure out how to redirect their life. And 20 years is also long enough for IDOC to correct anybody's irrational way of thinking or behaving. That's their job. So after 20 years, at least you should have the opportunity to be considered for parole. A lot of people are getting caught up in semantics from the political standpoint and thinking that, hey, look, we want to put these carve-outs there because of this, because of that. Listen, at the end of the day, if you spend 20 years in your life in prison and you've managed to redirect your irrational way of thinking and behaving by putting in the work, by going to school, taking advantage of the cognitive behavior programs that they have there, building up your job resume, then guess what? If we say we believe in a second chance, let's help facilitate that by giving people the opportunity to at least be considered for parole.
Just because you go, we
right.
establish a parole board, there's no guarantee that you're going to be able to be paroled. But at least let's get in alignment with this idea that we believe in giving people a second chance. Let's give them an opportunity to come out here and become useful citizens. Me, myself, I just come home after doing 30 years in prison, so I understand what it feels like to be in a state of mind of hopelessness. I've been the Tam Supermax
yes.
for 12 years. And so what I'm trying to tell you is this, is that if we're starting to move in a new direction in terms of when it comes to black lives, when it comes to just lives in general, when it comes to the injustice that have been imposed on people because of the flaws in the criminal justice system. You have people sitting in prison because they were tortured, they were beat. A lot of them were traumatized living in the communities that we live in. And if you can get through all of that madness after 20 years and build on your life in a significant way that shows that you are a changed person, then that's what it means to say, I believe in a second chance. You believed in a second chance on yourself. You put the work in to redirect your life. So why shouldn't you have the opportunity to be considered for freedom, to be returned back home to your household? You're not the same person that you were. If you're 50 years old and you view the world the same way you did when you was 20 years old, you're telling me that you're not a changed person. But an individual that views the world differently and behaves differently than the way that they did when they were 20 years their age, and they've done it in a positive way, it's only right that we consider bringing back the parole board and allowing these men, these women, and a lot of our elderly, a lot of our youth the opportunity to come back home and be productive citizens and be united with their family. This is what it means when we say we believe in freedom. This is what it means when we say that we believe in a second chance. Nothing since the 70s has been put in place to facilitate the opportunities for a second chance. So what I'm saying to anybody that's listening, want to come out there and support us, go to paroleillinois.org, and you can just help us simply by just spreading the word about what's really going on. You have a lot of families out here suffering. You have a lot of people in there suffering. And check out the beauty of the whole idea of bringing the parole board back. You now begin to change the atmosphere of the whole prison system, because now guys who once moved and thought in a way of hopelessness, they now have hope of the possibility of coming home.
Yes.
So that's enough right there to make you change the way that you think and behave. And guess what? That creates the atmosphere in the penitentiary and in these jails with the staff members that they no longer have to be feel like they got to walk on eggshells because they feel like this guy ain't got nothing to lose. No, it then becomes a cooperational process in which we're working towards freedom. And so it's time for people to start freeing their minds about how we think about punishment, how we deal with individuals who have been incarcerated because of a wrong, probably because they were poor, probably because they were abused. And that's not to negate anybody of having any responsibilities. We all have a responsibility once we come into the self-awareness that we've been thinking and behaving wrong. And a lot of these guys are putting the work in. Now, you got guys who got certificates, doctorate degrees, master degrees, bachelor's degrees, associate's degrees. And then you still have guys who came in there and they didn't have a lot of opportunities to go through the educational system and learn. So they learned the hard way. But somehow, some way, they got themselves out of that irrational way of thinking and became a new person. So if you believe in giving people a second chance, if you believe that you've made mistakes in your life and you're not the same person that you were 20 years ago, if you believe that and you truly do believe that, man, I'm asking y'all to come out and support Parole Illinois as we make this push to try to get these votes so we can get our founding members back home to the people they love, to our communities, and continue to build out not only from Manila but outside here.
Well, let me commend you both, presently still being held captive, and two, I think you said you did, you know, Kevin, you did 12 years as Supermax, and the total of 30 years in general. This should not be a foregone conclusion that just because someone's locked up, they're going to come out here and reach back for others. So I just want to commend you both, you know what I'm saying, for taking the stance to take. I just had someone tell me today about Bill Cosby being said to be released, and they were saying, somebody had made a comment like, "Oh, he's going to talk about all the prisoners." I said, "Well, don't draw a foregone conclusion that he's going to do that." You know, just because a person goes through a certain experience does not mean they're going to reach back. You know what I'm saying? So I'm going to commend you both. You know what I'm saying? For talking about these issues. I have to play. Not devil's advocate, but state's advocate. Let me ask you this question now. myself and others became familiar with the parole board or the indeterminate sentences before, I think it was up to, if I'm correct, they, like the 1978, they had started the determinate sentencing, as opposed to prior to that, cases like Larry Hoover, whose case is being back, brought back up, you know, and others, they were given 30 to 100-year sentences. And outside of Chicago, we heard about, like, say, the Moore family, you know what I'm saying? And some of the pros, Philadelphia, but the pros you mentioned, but however, some of the setbacks, I'm looking back, it was indiscriminate about, like, even the fact that the people, like the white prisoners, you know what I'm saying, they were disproportionately being released, you know what I'm saying, and every year it became to a point that I remember prisoners refused to even go to the parole board because it was so blatant about, you know, they make movies about it where they say you're going for the parole board, you show all the degrees you got, how much schooling you got, and they still say something like, you know, deny it. That's some of the setbacks in my mind about, you know, as opposed to the set sentencing, you know what I'm saying? And so can either one of you touch on that, like what safeguards can we put in place, if there are none, just reiterating how the pros outweigh the cons and why this is a strategic move that can benefit the community to move forward this campaign.
Well, I'll take a shot at it. I'll say this, Fred, that this fight is no different than the fight that your father fought. It's no different than the fight that you're fighting now. It's a fight about freedom. It's a fight about justice. It's a fight about righting wrongs. So that the question then becomes, how do we heal a system that we know is wrong, that has established, number one, structural violence, prejudice on particular groups, because now we're saying that certain people were given privileges over others for no other reason than their skin color. So how do we begin to heal from that standpoint? And so I feel like the way we begin to heal from that standpoint is that if you have individuals who have gone through their own personal transition and they've made that curve in their life where they're doing all of the right things as they know it, then they should be considered for an opportunity to return back out into society, because 20 years is long enough for you to figure that out. There's no different than, like, if you came home after doing a time in prison and an individual told you that you can't have a podcast or a talk radio show
you
for no other reason
left.
that you are a felon or a convict. You know what I mean?
Other caller, my fault. Jump in, because I know she's on time. Jump in.
It's all right. You know, I feel the same way. Everything that's happening right now is the way the system was aligned. So the system is doing exactly what it was planned to do. Now it's time to change the system and change the way we move and the way that we think and watch what we're doing, because the people that we are voting for are the ones that are putting us here. So now we need to go out and vote and support and get everybody to put all their misconceptions about parole and everything that they thought they knew about the system, because we're sitting in here in storage right now. We don't have the education that they say that they're giving us. We don't have the living conditions. Like, we're living in inhabitable living conditions right now. There were women that were walking
with
their own feet.
Securus. Goodbye.
Man, if you can leave your information with our board or our control board, and so when she calls back, we can give you her information, and I'll give her contact, so we can give you her contact also.
No doubt. I definitely appreciate it, man. But that's why we're fighting so hard to try to get this board back, because, I mean, unfortunately, she was cut off, but she got off into talking about some of the horrors that individuals are facing in there. And so that's why we're fighting so hard against what we believe to be a system that's wrong, a system that needs to be corrected. Why not give a person the opportunity of going to the board to be considered for a second chance if we say we believe in it? And if we say we believe in it, by definition of the Constitution that were written way before us, then how come there are not any mechanisms set in place to facilitate that? So if we say we really believe in that, this is a step towards establishing that, embodying that. And why not? And then once you go from there, we then want to be mindful about the individuals that we
that we have sitting on these boards, so we don't have a situation like we did with the seat numbers, or we don't have a situation where people are getting preferential treatment based upon race. You know what I mean? So that's why we're fighting so hard.
Like I've been fighting for clemency on my case, right? And we, you know, and we know the politics that goes along with that and everything else. But what that's a concern with the board. We know history, like a lot of these parole boards. In majority of cases, is police, present day police, former police, you know, some state administrators on a board. What safety? You know, I mean. It's kind of like in the outside community, and they call these, you know, police reviews or you know, reform actions. In many cases, we end up, you know, calling, as what Chairman Fred would say, calling on Frank James, stuff what Jesse James has done. So what thing, you know what I'm saying, to be, not that there's like no transparency, you don't even know who these individuals are, you know what I'm saying? Is there something inclusive in the bill that can, you know what I'm saying, I mean, there's some sort of community control or something, people have some say so, as opposed to going back to this facade of freedom, this front of objectivity, and you kind of find out that these are wardens and police officers and relatives, of, you know, so on and so forth. The patronage and the nepotism that occur. What can be inclusive inside the bill to at least acknowledge this contradiction, you know what I'm saying? I know it's not nothing's a foolproof this system in particular, but to be inclusive in the bill to address this contradiction.
Well, I'll say this. As I listen to everything that you said, right? I'll take that, even if it is what you were saying is true about different wardens and different people being on the boards and, you know, making arbitrary decisions. I'll take that. And the reason why I'll take that, because now a system has been set in place that offers possibility. Right now, there's no possibility. You've been given natural life without parole. That means there's no possibility. That means that even after you've the system, if the system has mechanisms set in place inside, even after you've been rehabilitated, after you've been rehabilitated, then what? You just left to sit there to suffer? Because there's no possibility for you to be released. So I'm saying that I take that because it offers a possibility that wasn't there. And for a lot of people, that's going to relieve a lot of anxiety, a lot of pressure, and it's going to give people an incentive to want to work on themselves, to want to work on the problems that they have. So me personally, being an individual that has been in prison, I'll take the possibility of being able to come home over not having the possibility at all. And I feel like later on down the road, if these ugly vices rear their head and we have people that want to be discriminatory based upon race or gender or, you know, or religion, then guess what? We'll attack that, other avenues for that. What I'm telling you right now, there is no possibility because we don't have any mechanism set in place. We don't have any mechanism set in place for individual. If the institution is saying that you sent to the Illinois Department of Corrections, meaning that you were sent there to try to correct your irrational way of thinking, believing, or behaving. So if the system had mechanisms in place to achieve that, then what? You're stuck. So that means that there's, you know what I'm saying, there's no hope. It's like it's all for naught. A lot of times we tell people to go to programs and be good while they're in prison, award them good conduct credit, and then we walk them out here into society into a failed system. I'm saying that the system is failed. It's a contradiction. So the only way to correct this contradiction is to establish systems that facilitate opportunities for a second chance, opportunities to showcase that the Department of Correction is doing their job. They're rehabilitating people to become useful citizens so they can return back out into society. There's a saying that says you're sent to punishment, you're sent to prison as a form of punishment, but not to be punished. Because we all know that negativity begets negativity. So if you're sent here under my watch for me to tutor you, to get you to start thinking the right way, and I achieve that, then guess what? The possibility should be there for you to be considered to be returned back home. And that's what it's all about. This fight is no different than the, like I said before, the fight that your bloodline had. We're fighting against the injustice that we know is wrong. And so we try to help facilitate a system that would be just and it would be fair.
If I don't want to seem like, you know, I just want to get on the command the fight, and I just want to, we can't put as many as we call political pills, the Panther Club political pills, and the applesauce. I just, you know, like at a time when I come to the hills, certainly the programs have been taken up out of the prisons. You know what I'm saying? I mean, this even not just even the educational programs, things that people, you know, like the this big campaign, like the weights and stuff like that. The boxing gyms, stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? It's called different programs they had where you can learn a trade. So, the programs that existed during the initially were like similar to that of the projects, the public housing. When the white community was there, public housing was, there were programs put inside the public housing. You can go back and look at old pictures. You know what I'm saying? The grass, the janitorial services, everything was put in place. And in prison, mind you, we come up the hills after chattel slavery, sharecropping, where prison, you know what I'm saying, there were actual programs at the prisons, you know what I'm saying, for the white prisoners. And however, you know, so we've seen them, you know what I'm saying, snatched away. So if we can, because it's like, it's kind of my concern, two concerns. Well, one concern is, even, you know, we push for the, you know, like, kind of like we demanding that we, you know, so we, you know, so we made it be rehabilitated. But there, I know these prisons, these concentration camps, I mean, like caskets, like you know, face from Ghetto Boys, say, you know, I like how you said, it's like living and dying at the same time. You have the best intentions. There's nothing to, you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's kind of like an overworking, they say, look under your seat, you just want a car. And then you have the car you want, you have to pay all these taxes on them, you know what I'm saying, you'll get insurance. You end up in debt. There's nothing inside, you know what I'm saying, it's a setup. So we can include something, attach this in while the door's open, while the conversation's open about, you know what I'm saying, about that. And also about the program, because I think we draw the foregone conclusion that things like politicians come in our community, they say stop the violence, and you go look in our communities, you know what I'm saying? And other people, you know what I'm saying, like, they're talking about, you know, resources being allocated, you know what I'm saying? So we don't draw the foregone conclusion that, because a lot of people, I mean, like, my last memory of inside those concentration camps is being forced to take these boxes. You know what I'm saying? You only have a limit to how many books you can have. And you know what I'm saying? People would betray each other prisoners just to get outside and be able to walk and clean the gallery. You know, because there was no exercise, no nothing. You know, so being inside a cage 24 hours a day. Situation that if the Humane Society heard what they were doing to us in those prisons, there'll be an uproar. So if we can include some of these issues, you know what I'm saying? While the conversation is growing, and because you got to be real, like, even I think back of an unpopular position that Minister UEP Newton of the Black Panther Party, the visionary for the Black Panther Party, has stated in regards to in California when the former governor, Ronald Wilson Reagan, before he became president, he was a governor of California and probably himself as a liberal. He pushed the thing about conjugal visits, and a lot of people said this is going to be great. You know what I'm saying? And Minister UEP Newton was talking about some of the contradictions, how he had seen how the state had utilized inside the prison the control of even certain prisons with their lovers, the fellow counterparts, male prisoners inside the prison, and how the state was going to use this conjugal visit to their benefit, you know what I'm saying, a control tactic. So I just really, again, not to sound as appears as a naysayer, but I just want to push as much as we can and not draw a foregone conclusion about those programs, about, you know what I'm saying, about that balance of that board, like, you know what I'm saying, some objectivity. Because one of the benefits they do when they have is, it's a facade of freedom, like, you know, like it gives the impression we have this, and you said 30 plus years, you know, like on the prison menu, on the menu they have for the food, It looks real nice. And then we like, where this menu come from? You know what I'm saying? We the food come with that. We ain't never seen none of this stuff. You know what I'm saying? So, we would prefer them to say, now put down the wig and slop. So, just like, you know, I remember stories of brothers saying, I'm not even going in front of this damn board. You know what I'm saying? And people getting upset with them, like, why you don't go, man? One person getting upset. He's like, man, you don't know how degrading and get my hopes up high. I go through, you know what I'm saying? I got the schooling, I got this education, I got this. And then, you know what I'm saying, some white prisoner come back, he got this vicious quadruple murder, rape, everything, and walks through, ain't been in school today, basically been there, and walks out. So, you know, as Ministry of People said, prison is a microcosm of the outside community. So even if we don't have it on the paper, at minimum, if we can get, this led to the community to push the line about, you know, some the balance and objectivity, that we have some control. Because there's so many cases, you know, the fine print, like even they talk about like the cameras, the police, you know what I'm saying? And people say, wait a minute, you know what I'm saying? They can cut the cameras off, you know what I'm saying, when they want to. They're so Machiavellian. But you know what I'm saying? We're giving the impression that it's some leaps being made. You know what I'm saying? And you say, well, wait, I didn't see the fine print. You know what I'm saying? And then we had to go back and regroup. We had to go back and regroup our troops again and say, let's come on. And then, what you tripping about? Y'all got this? You know what I'm saying? You got the. You say, yeah, we didn't know, you know what I'm saying, Lieutenant Kozlowski and, you know what I'm saying, and a sergeant. Such is going to be on the board. The one and Officer Green, the same officer that locked the prisoner up, is on the board, the parole board. So some sort of, at least these are some concerns that laid out. The one of the Achilles heels with this system is just pointing out, just acknowledgement. And we just laid it out. That's a concern. You know what I'm saying? It forces them to say, okay, well, we got to be some more Machiavellian. You know what I'm saying? Come with some more concessions.
Yes, we definitely
I'll be the bad guy. Listen, you know, we understand that y'all coming in good faith, but there's some people out there, you know, this guy, you know, Chairman Free, have the Black Panther Party, because they kind of paranoid. They think that y'all will come in with some energy, and we in the community said, you know, this even said, you know what I'm saying, that's put out up front, you know what I'm saying, during the hearings or whatever. This is a concern, I'd be open to those to come state. You know what I'm saying? This is a concern we have, because just acknowledging the contradiction in many cases, it forces them to go back, you know what I'm saying, the hole, because as UEP News said, they love to perform their treachery in the dark, and our job is to turn the lights on. So if they could be inclusive in the conversation, I think it would be a leap.
I mean, no doubt. I mean, there's an old passage that said that our people suffer because of our people perish because of lack of knowledge. So that means the first step is awareness. So it's about bringing awareness to these issues and then confronting it. Now, I agree with you 100% that the prison system should open up more with programs. But this also helps to tie into with the parole board. If you got an individual who's for over the last 20 years has taken advantage of the minimum amount of programs that they have available, and have exhausted that, and then somehow, some way, figured out how to take the initiative to reach out to outside correspondence courses to continue to build upon their self, then guess what? That shows a lot of strength. That shows a lot about an individual's character in terms of wanting to change. So the issue then becomes, how do we duplicate that? How do we duplicate that in a prison system that doesn't have enough programs for individuals? What we do is we try to fight for those programs, to get more of those programs, to give guys the help that they need, because everybody's situation is going to be different. You have guys, man, that's been locked up. You have people that have been locked up, man, since they was kids, since they was teenagers. Let alone we turn around and say that your brain's not even fully developed until you're about 25 years old. And you got people that's been sitting up in there longer than that, that's been sexually abused, that's been dealing with trauma in their neighborhoods, seeing they friends and relatives get killed. And so this becomes normalized behavior, you know. But at the same time, as you spoke about what's really like structural violence, you know what I mean? And so we counter that by, man, making sure, like you said, that we continue to fight for programs that's going to be able to help individuals, and then we fight to get this mechanism in place for giving up.
An incarcerated individual at Fayetteville Correctional Center. This call is subject to recording and monitoring. To accept this free call, press
One, to refuse this, be aware, any attempt to add a third party to any call from Illinois DOC will result in inmate disciplinary action, and the involved end user's phone number will be globally blocked from future calls from all Illinois DOC facilities.
Thank you for using Securus. You may start the conversation now.
Hello?
Hello, who am I speaking with?
It's Joseph Dole from Parole, Illinois.
Okay, great on. Can you, I got Kevin on right now also. He's online right now. So I feel bad. Actually, it's a 929 number. I want you to call us so we can all be privy to you. Know, say, is it possible 929-477-3785?
Yeah, man, it would take me like 3-4 weeks to put another number on my list.
Oh wow, okay. All right, well let's go. We got you on now. Let's do this. Okay. All right. Okay, go okay. Kevin, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. What's up, Joe?
I wish it had you called radio station so people can come down to put you in the radio. I don't know. We on live right now. I'm horrible with this technology. So I have Kevin online. We have some people. We talking about the people. I just lost half my audience, but feel free to jump in and give us what you have to say about this. We think about this deal.
Like I said, this is Joseph Dole from Parole, Illinois. We're pushing, throughout the legislative session, we were pushing what we're calling re-earned reentry, and it's House Bill 2399, Senate Bill 2333. In the Senate, Senator Selena Villanueva is our chief co-sponsor, her and Senator Robert Peters, and in the House, our chief co-sponsor is Carol Atkins. And what it would do with the bill is basically the safety valve for all these harsh sentencing laws that have been going on for 40 years. Like, back in the 70s, everybody got a chance at parole. No matter what your case, what your time, after about a dozen years, you were going to come up before the parole board to see if you were ready to return to society and, you know, be a productive member. And so, like, in 78, they abolished that, and then they just kept stacking law after law, whether it's super sentencing or gun add-ons or whatever, so that now you've got thousands of people locked up in the IDOC serving death by incarceration, either serving a life without parole sentence or 50 years, 100 years, stuff like that. So, like, all of those laws need to be addressed, but it's going to take time. It took 40 years to build up all these harsh punitive sentencing laws. And they were all brought about on the fallacy of deterrence, that if you made penalties strict enough, people wouldn't break the law. It would, you know, it would scare people into not breaking the law. But what we learned is that, well, if you just, you know, people normally age out of crime, and these laws weren't really scaring anybody, because in order to deter someone, people have to know what the consequences are and actually believe that they're going to get caught, which doesn't apply to the majority of people committing crime, which are young kids, their brains ain't even fully developed yet, et cetera. So all these politicians spouting this tough-on-crime rhetoric for decades were basically doing it off the backs of people in the future that were going to fall under these sentences, and they never had to solve the crime problem. All they had to do was, we're going to increase sentences. So all of that stuff really needs to be addressed. But as a safety valve right now, until we can address all that, we want to bring back, like, a merit-based reentry system. So, like, you would go before the Prisoner Review Board, and after 20 years, which is plenty of time to be able to, you know, show whether you rehabilitated, whether you have a reentry plan and everything else, get ready to come back to society, and the Prisoner Review Board will review you, just like they're still reviewing some of the C members, just like they're now going to start reviewing some of the juvenile offenders and some of the people that the governor's already commuting their sentence to clemency. So you go before that same board, which is actually a lot better than the old parole board, but we weren't able to get it passed in the normal legislative session, so we're trying to push it through the veto session, which comes up in October, but we need to build up more votes. We're close, so we need more votes in the House and more votes in the Senate. So, you know, we're just trying to get the word out and trying to build support. So if, you know, if people are interested in helping us out, our website's paroleillinois.org. There's plenty of ways you can help out. You can sign on as a supporter so you get our emails and other social media stuff so that we can let you know what we're doing. You can, you know, click on the Action Network button where it'll, you know, send letters to your legislators. And you can donate online. You can learn more about the bill there. We also have, you know, Twitter and Instagram and Facebook page. But, you know, our organization was started by guys here in Sayville and activists out there to try and push the agenda farther than some of the established players are willing to push it. You have, like, there's one organization, I won't say his name, but they refuse to push any legislation that is retroactive or that doesn't have 1,000 carve-outs in it because they want an easy win. They don't want to have to really fight for any of their bills to pass. They just want to take whatever short-term win they can get. But those short-term wins leave people in prison behind. And, you know, if you're acknowledging that these laws need to be corrected, then some of the most deserving people of that correction are people that are current victims of those past laws that are still in prison. And when they're asking for carve-outs, a lot of times they don't understand that carve-outs are extremely racist, first of all. They don't make sense, like, in any form or fashion. So, like, carve-outs is basically making certain, like, childless sex offenders, some like that, excluded, right? But they want to exclude thousands of people. They don't just want to exclude a few, you know, really dangerous people. And, you know, parole never had carve-outs. We're only asking for an opportunity to be reviewed. So it's not like everybody's going to get out of prison or anything. It's just you're going to come up for review. The reason carve-outs are racist, though, is because those same categories that they want to carve people out of or that they want in those carve-outs are like the heater cases that, you know, Chicago, they call them the heater cases, the ones that are, like, really politically hot button. And, you know, if you look at long-term sentencing, blacks only make up 14-15% of the state population, but they make up almost 70% of the lifer population and the long-termers. And the main cases, like sex offenses, that's the main charge that people are wrongly convicted of, and they're disproportionately, the people who are wrongly convicted of those crimes are disproportionately black. Our system's so messed up that it might take you 20 or 30 years just to prove your innocence, and that's if you got a huge team backing you. So there's plenty of people in prison that are still innocent of even, like, some of the most heinous crimes that, you know, they just don't have the resources and the money or like Northwestern or somebody pushing behind them. So, I mean, it would suck to have to be 20 years on a wrongful conviction. At least this would be another kind of safety valve to give them a review instead of making them spend their entire life in prison. And same thing with everybody else. Like, there's, you know, a ton of young adults, juveniles that deserve a second chance. A lot of other guys that, you know, finally grew up in prison and got over the trauma they experienced on the streets and other stuff, and they just want to get out and give back to society. But there's no mechanism for that. There's no way for them to do that unless, you know, you win the lottery and the governor grants you clemency, which is extremely rare. I mean, Pritzker's granted more clemencies than a lot of people in the past, but, I mean, if he really wants to do some, he should be looking at blanket clemency like George Ryan did for death row. Pritzker should be looking at blanket clemency to clear slow death row just as well.
We're live and direct on Fairmont Radio. We're not on Facebook right now. We've been with the channel Fairmont Radio and also Robert Allen, a.k.a. Lady Rage. We're also fortunate to have people who from the inside actually calling in. I'm kind of juggling people right now. We also have Kevin online with us. Not just troubleshooting about some of the things, but definitely we're not going to hold the process of putting a call out for people to get on board, but you know, still to make sure we fight to get some kinks in the armor that, you know what I'm saying, that could be there, you know what I'm saying, that we put it forward. And we'll stay in contact. We push the line. That some of our concerns are inclusive with it. But I don't know if you can, Kevin, you feel free to jump in too. If you can't give us what are some of the calls of people to do now? Because young lady, she's going to call back in. We're going to get both of y'all connected to her too. What are some calls that can be done now, you know, in regards to, you know, which state representatives to be reached out to, what to follow up, what needs, you know, what's the stage in the game, you know, what can be happening now in addition to, you know, getting the word out, you know, through such outlets as Fairmont Radio.
Yeah, I mean, people living in Illinois, wherever you're at, if you go on our website, ruralillinois.org, we have an action alert button. It'll get you right to your district's reps, but we also need, like, the leadership in the House and in the Senate, so if people will, you know, write, call, whatever, to Chris Welch, head of the Senate, or the head of the House, and Don Harmon, the head of the Senate, make sure it's on the calendar, you know, ask them to make sure it's on the calendar for the veto session, and, you know, keep spreading the word and build support. And we're going to have public meetings. We got a public meeting coming up on Zoom on June 9th. The information is going to be on our website and social media. But, I mean, it's, you know how legislation is. It's a tricky game, and there's always, like, you know, surprises everywhere. So it's just people need to stay involved and keep at it, especially if you have a loved one in prison and you want to see them get a chance to come out, him or her. And they're a long-termer. This is just the first step in numerous fights. If we can get this fast this year, try and tackle truth and sentencing next year.
No doubt.
Right on. Yeah. Feel free, Kevin, co-host. Anybody else want to jump in? Feel free.
Everything I was going to ask, they... In the conversation, they've already answered the question, because I was going to ask about a campaign other than the ParoleIllinois.org. Was it some type of social media campaign where you could just retweet or post, you know, so more people could know about it, put it up on Facebook and everything? And one thing I'd just like to know is carve out. How do you spell that? How do you spell that? Carve out.
Kevin?
We lost that caller.
Okay.
Listen, can you hear me? This is Mother Comrade.
Yeah.
How
you doing?
Can y'all hear me? Fred Mom. Listen,
yes,
I just want to say real quick, this is a really powerful conversation, and Chairman Fred, I want to thank you for shining the light on the roaches in the room so they could be scattering, also taking the cover off the pig and the blanket off the pig in the room, exposing. You always stick in the fight, real deal. You're saying, who set up these situations? There's a report, A New Lease on Life, this from white people, draws upon international, national, and state-level research and revealed that racially charged fear-mongering by media and policymakers led to the lengthening of prison sentence. Indeed, most state-level studies show that people who are released from life sentences are in prison for a new offense at a rate of less than 5%.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
So, listen, I just want to say real quick, this is a really powerful conversation.
That's on Facebook. I'm trying to put the trying to record, because Okay.
This is featured on CNN this morning, and it's just saying that the recidivism, documenting the widespread evidence that people convicted of homicide and other crimes of violence rarely commit new crimes of violence after release, and how that's, you know, fueled by those who set the rules, the boards, and all of that. And it's a profit in keeping people locked up. It's a whole business. That's why you think all these private prisons popping up.
I was saying that too, Mama Core. It's like they're releasing their employees if they let them go. Like you said, it's big business. So why would they release you? Why would they set you back out into a reentry program when they'll be losing money? So it's big business.
Well, I'm not saying they won't, but I want people to go into this piece understanding what's set up. You know what I'm saying? What's the pig in the room? It's always the state, and it has people chasing this. This can happen, that can happen, but it's not. It's said this is fueled by racist media and the systems, you know, that support it. So people go in with that instead of idealism that this is going to, they're going to pass a law or something that, going, you know, we're going to be free. So I just want people to take a realistic view, and I think that's what Chairman Fred was talking about. We can do two things at one time. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
We ain't got to just do this and that's it. We need to put on our front.
So
this is an emotional issue, and really, as reality is, we can't even fathom the difference, you know, since the dynamics with this system, you know, saying does to us, and in fact, there is no African term for prison, for jail. It's a foreign, it's a foreign phenomenon to us. There's no concept of this. There, you know, like you have, you know, there's no concept like put the Caucasian human beings up. It's a foreign concept. And the deal is, you know, we can. The economic, the political, the overall political significance of what this does to generations to come. Like, in many cases, we see our people, like, it's when people are released after doing 30, 40 years, we cheer for it, but I mean, they've been taking during that reproductive period. You know what I'm saying? So many dynamics with this. It's the trickle down impact of the crimes and so forth. So, and it's embarrassing that we're coming from a deficit. And this and the other struggles with the deal that we just, you know, heighten the contradiction. Well, given, you know, saying given the system, given a place of land where, you know, saying certain concessions can be allotted, but, you know, saying again, coming through very clear, because it's not by happenstance they can lay out from our school records on which one wants to be going to the prisons, and, you know, it's done by design. Mm-hmm. You know, what's happening in our community, and we can heighten these contradictions and really be able to move on a pivot. And pushing for these concessions, and there are certain times when the door is open, when people can speak for themselves, when you have actually locked up, or not just being locked up, because experience alone is not, you know, mandate that we can relate and articulate those experiences. But it's good we have this conversation, and as opposed to usual suspects in so many cases, where the state grabs some of the same individuals who have stock in the prisons, who benefit of the prisons, is literally also having the conversation when looking at that. And it's those intelligence can be engaging with Chairman Fred referred to as excursion and futility. So I just want to say that we see the time while the conversation is happening, contrary to a time and period where people just automatically do them, or you locked up, you did something wrong, and all the propaganda, that the warden is right, the prison is true, and looking at, in many cases, how people get morality mixed up with legality. They get morality confused with legality. You know, like, you know, it's something, even during the era of chattel slavery, well, we had to be bad people to be slaves. So, you know, those who are locked up, they had to be bad people. And as opposed to, because, you know, saying some actual, on the Animal Channel, National Geographic, it's not a question when the leopard, you know, eats the oxen or the antelope. This antelope or oxen was a bad antelope or oxen. It's a hunt. It's the hunt. It's the blood, you know what I'm saying? It's not you know, what, you know, whether this, you know, whether this antelope or this oxen, you know what I'm saying, could have, you know, went to a different institution or got a better education or registered to vote. The leopards, it's a hunt, you know. And deal is there's the machine, it needs the blood, sweat, and tears of people, and black people in particular, to be fair, in order to be a successful war. And, so not just the stereotypical license plates being made, but lingerie, computer chips, you name it, is literally built of the modern day slave. And it's not, we have to fight it, but expose it, and be able, in the meantime, between time, to be able to greet them, say, get some, you know, send some of our most valuable resources back out of here. And that's the people. You know what I'm saying? We said for your mom, we know it's not going to happen. You know, but just in that court, it happened overnight. Move forward with pushing these demands and going in again realistically, and just and being able to recognize these is the concessions. But this is be also mindful. This is a Machiavellian system. You talk about the even Governor Reagan that came with the conjugal visits. You know what I'm saying? Under the auspices of being liberal in California, and the unpopular position that Minister UEP knew had to talk about, address those contradictions. And he's saying one of the most difficult jobs of being a revolutionary is fighting in the interest of the people, even at times made them fail because I know their respective interests. So that means that we're going to keep on, Kevin, if you can, give us, I say we had lost Joe, and we're going to make sure we connect you with the young lady, too. Where's we at now, and how we move forward with this? With this demand, again, we, you know, still moving forward, and as we said, we can walk and chew gum at the same time, but how can we move forward at the same time, making sure we're keeping those guards up and those concerns inclusive with the package? I prefer it be on the paperwork, but we'll take the road, you know what I'm saying? We'll be down there in Springfield ourselves, too, you know what I'm saying? Get some buses to go down there.
No doubt.
And be out there making that noise out there that we heard about our concern.
No,
so you can't give us
no.
Yes, sir.
No doubt. That's, I mean, just what we're doing now. We're dialoguing. Sometimes communication can enhance your level of understanding about what's going on. So I think it's important for us to continue to have these you know, wise conversations about positive change. So then it comes down to awareness. We want to make sure that we're making people aware about what's going on. We want to make sure that we make people aware about this issue and tell them, hey, listen, if you want to get involved, go to paroleillinois.org. We also want the people who that want to be involved, we want you to start trying to figure out, you know, who in your district has power vested in them to have a say-so in this particular issue. And then once we figure that out, we want to make sure we keep pressure on them. If we don't speak out, if we don't say nothing about it, it's going to continue to get swept up under the rug, and it's going to continue to be business as usual. We are in the fight of as you just said, being a revolutionary. You know, we're trying to change systems of structural violence, systems of racism, systems of oppression, as well as repression. We're fighting against that. We're freedom fighters. Just like you used to always say Uhuru or Uhuru. It means, in Swahili, it means freedom. And we are all freedom fighters. It's just a new day and time. We're fighting to try to right the wrongs of systems that have continued to be oppressive and repressive towards our people, and our people are continuing to be punished by that. Whether you're going with the public housing system back in the days in Chicago, or we're talking about the prison industrial system in the modern days right now. You've been victimized by, I've been victimized by, and we're saying, man, enough is enough. Let's stop unnecessarily victimizing people and saying things out of our mouth that comes off as oxymorons, that they're contradictory. We believe in giving people a second chance, but there are no systems set in place to facilitate that since the 70s in Illinois. If we believe in second chances, let's establish a system that helps facilitate that, and that system is bringing the parole board back into Illinois where people can be considered for the possibility to go home if they've done what you said earlier about needing more programs, cognitive behavior programs, anger management programs. Programs are going to help individuals meet the needs, their needs, because everybody's issue is going to be different. If we can establish that, then guess what? This may expedite the process of helping people become rehabilitated or habilitated back to useful citizenship. So those are the steps. contactparoleillinois.org. And, man, continue to have these conversations, continue to spread the word. I want to definitely salute you and the sisters that spoke out and everybody that was a part of this conversation, because it's an important issue. This is an issue that has been affecting black communities for the longest of times, because we're the ones that are suffering the most as a result of it. But it ain't about black, it ain't about brown. It's about everybody. It's about being inclusion. It's all about all of us being in a cooperational process to break down systems that we know are wrong. It's about us trying to make right by it. It's called justice. It's called freedom. So let's continue to fight and get that word out there, man, and give these guys the opportunity to get back out here and have some freedom, because they put the work in. They deserve a second chance.
So you're right. Right on. Welcome. Freedom on Radio is always here. Welcome for you. And others, make sure we're gonna see if we get that get her information to you, and vice versa. So leave with the board, our control board, if you can, so we can follow up and keep us updated. We're gonna be keeping our concerns. You know, saying on the table and in the dope. You know, yes indeed.
No doubt, man. We appreciate it, man. And I want to tell you real quickly before I get out of here that Ollie Head told me to tell you what's up, and then Lanis Adams, Big B.I.G., told me to tell you what's up. They still fighting, try to get back out here so they can join forces with you, man, and right some of the wrongs that's going on in our communities and throughout the world.
Hey, get them my love, man. Hey, man. Y'all can't pull it from somewhere, man. Send Ollie Thomas, man, a letter or something. And both of them, but get them my love, my respect, man. Hey, can't I come up with, you know, I mean, I'm fortunate to know, man. You stay my love, respect, no doubt about it, man. Love, respect, and clinch this salute, man. Both of them, man. Real talk, man. Real talk.
No doubt, brother.
Love, respect.
Keep fighting for freedom.
Yes, sir, my brother. Yes, sir. No surrender. So you live in the Rick Yellow Fremont Radio, y'all, making history, taking history, taping history. So the camera, give us a heads up, get any more callers in queue.
Yo, free them all, brother chairman. Yeah, actually, we do. Yeah, we're at 10 seconds, but we do have a caller. Sister Siri is in line. Free them all.
You might get cut up in 10 seconds. You might get a call next weekend. Come on, free them all. Welcome, free them all.
Let me just say one thing. Pendo4freedom.org. Get a free consultation. Can do to free them all. It'll happen immediately. This is international law. P-E-N-D-O, freedom, freedom.org. It's international, and it's international law. The U.S. has been told to repair us, and they refused. You just don't know about it. It'll never be in the news. You really should talk to me next week. You can see me on my YouTube, Siri, S-I-R-I, Lily, L-I-L-Y, Shiloh, S-H-I-L-O.
Oh, Belinda.
That's me. Sister Elena Porter is the person who filed the paperwork in the United Nations that Malcolm X was trying to file when they murdered him, and what MLK was about to go file when they murdered him. We are a nation. We just don't know it. All we have to do is claim our rights. We can take over any population where we are the largest population. The prison is one. Any ghetto, any place, we can own it, the land. They've been told to give back the land, and they're refusing. They walked out in the conference on Durban, but you really have to understand. Get a free consultation from Sister Porter. She's teaching international law on how we can free ourselves. Lawyers don't know about this. I've taught them myself.
Say it again.
Lawyers don't know about this. I've taught a couple myself. Domestic U.S. lawyers are not taught this on purpose. It is an institution. It's unfixable. We've tried for how many, 400 years? 200 years? In Texas, we didn't know that slavery even ended for 2 years. It's an institution. You can't fix it. Let them have it. We'll build our own. We can control
peace to you as well, no doubt about it. Let me say again, y'all, another episode of Freedom on Radio. Stay locked and loaded, y'all. We got half of this on Instagram, half of it on Facebook. I'm hoping this stream y'all can post and we figure this out. We keep y'all heads up, eyes on the fist clenched again. Let's make history. Let's take history. Let's take history, y'all. We'll keep y'all posted again. Y'all tune in. Again, make sure y'all support your Kingdom of StateOfTheHappenHouse.org. StateOfTheHappenHouse.org. Donate button. Also, Cash App. $SaveTheHappenHouse. That's it. That's been an honor. Keep your heads up, eyes on the fist clenched. Again, everything. Everything is political. Keep your eyes open for the upcoming campaigns. The retreat from Chirac and retreat from the murder woods. We'll be having buses leaving on the weekend, leaving out of Chirac, leaving out of murder woods, taking children down to the land, the Black Oaks Farm and other places that can be out there, you know what I'm saying, on the land with the animals, with the garden, and put them to work. You know what I'm saying? Put them to work. Look for that campaign upcoming. Also, Bulletproof Love, August 30th. Bulletproof Love for Chairman Fred Hampton. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Bulletproof is his birthday. Bulletproof Love. We continue, you know what I'm saying, commemorating the tombstone, the cover of this casing of Chairman Fred's tombstone, y'all. Again, we defend our life and as well as in death. Here's the Arizona Fist Clash. Again, what's the call? Free them all.
Free them all.
Come right, give us something to start with. Free them all.
Heads up, eyes open, the fist clenched.
Yeah,
you still be the chairman, Fred Hampton Jr.
Live and direct.
See, now I need y'all to bear with me as I bear my soul and take you on the insides behind enemy lines about some state-sanctioned assassinations, mass incarcerations, and some other plans that these pigs have put into place in order, amongst other things, to control the world population. You see, now it ain't no coincidence. A lot of y'all cats don't even know about the infamous COINTELPRO shit. G-Men, government hitmen, directed by Director J. Edgar Hoover, the hitmen. Political frameups in which they still got a lot of cats politically caged up, killing us and hitting us with more than just a gun. And some names for legal reasons, I can't even mention, they're still on the run. Now imagine, if you will, same goddamn government brought in all the dope, putting your picture on the poster, placing a bounty on your black ass, with the words warning blazing across the daily news front page. Your face being placed right up under an institution issue scope. See, we talking about a bunch of bad motherfuckers. We're looking for number one duck in no motherfucking trouble. See, go-getters and hard-hitters who gave us free medical centers. You see, stood straight up against the system and said, yeah, motherfucker, we subversive and freedom of death. And strapped up in the spirit of self-defense. Free clothes and free busing programs. First free breakfast programs. Armed with a political ideology that withstood the test of time. And a 10-point platform. Hold on now. Now fast forward in closing words. On the tongues of the Black Panther Party clubs. Let us continue resisting. Never forget. 2037 West Monroe. 4:35 a.m. in the morning. West side of Chicago. 1969. December 4th.